Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on food apocalypse GMOs when we come back. You know, the average American household making between $22,000 and $30,000 a year spends about 16% or $5,000 of its income on food. Now, if the household makes between $40,000 and $60,000 a year, they'll spend about 10% or about $6,000 on food. 12% of American households today purchase organic produce, and they buy from health food stores, organic produce salesmen, and farmers markets. Now, that translates into some 34 million people coast to coast and border to border. And already there are more than 4,000 of these small organic farms producing organic fruits, vegetables, and meats on 25 acres or less, and they're making $100,000 a year or more serving this growing specialty market. And some of these farms are as small as 3 acres, and they're in every state in the union. Old Henry Kaiser summed it up nicely when he said of this and of his business success, he said, you find a need and fill it. Well, here's a need just waiting to be filled. Now, the law school has a program to teach you how to make that $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. It's a 5-day school that includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and how to follow the laws. Why don't you call us today and ask for our free general law CD package. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational, and best of all, it's free. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, God, back at the Tower of Babel, made an observation. He, after having witnessed the construction of the Tower of Babel, said in Genesis 11, verse 6, that what these people had begun to do, now there would be no restraining them. He said, the Eternal said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. We humans are pretty intelligent critters. I think we have surprised our Creator more than once, both in our abilities, as you see here, and in the rank evil that we can create. Now, there's some statutes in the Bible that should give us some guide and guidance concerning these GMOs, at least that's the way I see it. And the author of the book called Food Apocalypse GMOs, his name is Greg Ciola. You can get a copy of the book from Brave New Bookstore, and they're located in Austin, Texas, Brave New Bookstore. The reason I keep using them is because now I found a bookstore here in America, just one source that carries all of these underground books, books that have been blacked out by CBS and ABC and NBC and Murdoch Publishing and the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, the government, you know, and so on. You might be able to find the book at Amazon.com or your local bookstore. I'm not saying that you can't. I'm not telling you to go here that you have to buy from a Brave New Bookstore. I don't have any connection with them, other than I found out about them, and they're carrying these types of underground books. I say underground because they're not mainstream books. This isn't something, you know, that you're going to see here in the mainstream press. This is not going to be reported by Katie Couric or Jim Lehrer. So, in order for us to be informed concerning the important news events that are going on around us, other than the propaganda that they're, you know, that we're all supposed to believe, and if you want to get some truth behind it, then you're going to have to go somewhere else, in a different source. And Brave New Bookstore has a website. It's called bravenewbookstore.com, or you can call them at 512. Here's their phone number. It's 512-480-2503. Again, that's 512-480-2503 in Austin, Texas, and tell them you'd like to have a copy of Food Apocalypse GMOs, genetically modified organisms. He starts off, does the Bible have anything to say against genetic engineering? Now, you know, whether you're a Catholic, a Protestant, a Jew, or you're a Muslim or something else, is there any hint that the Creator of the universe, whoever he may be, you know, Allah, Yahweh, Jesus, you know, whatever name you hang, deity, you know, whatever, any hint that this guy might be opposed to this program? You know, when you're out here splicing flounder genes into tomatoes, it sends a pretty strong signal to me that God must have made a mistake when he made tomatoes, that he did not put in flounder genes. Something he left out. He forgot. He was a doddering old fool, and he didn't get it right. And thank God for Monsanto and modern technology. And they're going to fix God's mistake. I'm not at all persuaded that the pharmaceutical industry, you know, the people that are behind this and gave us Tamiflu, I guess it is, and Vioxx and thalidomide, are the people that I want to go to for this kind of cutting-edge technology. Now, we've been getting along on this planet, so say the evolutionists, for millions of years without this technology. And so far, we've done pretty well. Even if you're not an evolutionist, you know, you'd have to concede that we've gotten along all right for the last 4,000 or 5,000 years, you know, since the creation, since Adam and Eve, without splicing rat genes into our lettuce. We've gotten by without the rat genes in the lettuce. It may well be that rat genes in the lettuce is going to make us more intelligent, or it's going to do something for us that's really desirable and that we all ought to experience. And that God, for whatever reason, forgot and didn't put it in, and that we've got Monsanto over here, and they're going to fix his mistakes. It could be. I don't think it's very likely, but, you know, let's assume that it could be. Even without it, we'd get along quite nicely. The thing that bothers me is that we don't have any idea what the overall outcome of this is going to be. It reminds me of the old movies of Frankenstein. See, Dr. Frankenstein says, well, I'm going to build this human being. And, you know, Igor, when he went out to get the brain, he raided a grave, and he got the wrong grave, and he got the brain out of a criminal. And so the Frankenstein monster that Dr. Frankenstein, if you remember the story here, had intended to be a benefit to mankind. And this is a brave new step forward in a brave new world of modern technology and science. And so here's this monster now with this criminal brain, and he's going around killing people and tearing things up and just raising hell everywhere he goes. A mistake was made. Now, mistakes are made, but I think mistakes, if we think about it rationally and logically here, should be made on a small scale, over here somewhere out of the way where it doesn't hurt anybody, so that we can learn how to do this. And we can practice and do our mistakes over here where they're not going to cause a lot of damage. That's not the way this GMO thing is coming down. They're experimenting on 300 million people all at the same time. They want all of us to participate in the experiment. Now, some of us have decided we're going to opt out of the experiment. I'm one of them. There's a few million of us out here says, no, we don't want to participate in this program. And some of us have looked into the Bible, and the Bible does, in fact, have a lot to say. And the author of the book hit the nail on the head, I thought, pretty well, which is why I thought I'd review this chapter, which deals with, does the Bible have anything to say against genetic engineering? And the answer is, you bet it does. Now, quite surprisingly, the author starts, this question is one that has rarely been discussed by anyone in the scientific community. And yet it may quite possibly be the most important question regarding all aspects of biotechnology. There is ample evidence from both the Bible and extra-biblical books that shows strong disapproval of genetic engineering. The author of all life is God. And according to the first chapter of the book of Genesis, he created every species to reproduce after its own kind. Thus, there is no room in God's creation for man to step in and start modifying DNA by cross-transplanting the genes from one organism or species into the DNA of another. In essence, man is now creating species, variants that God never intended to exist, and such alteration of species, specifically, is a serious violation of God's natural order, God's law, and I believe it to be a corruption of life and an abomination unto the Creator. Now, a lot of people, you know, about this point in time say, well, you know, if man can do it, why shouldn't we? Well, boys and girls, you know, just because we could make an atomic bomb, should we? The other day, I read a story about a scientist. He went up to Alaska and he dug up a grave up there. Somebody had died back in 1918, and they wanted to go to Alaska to dig this body up, because up in Alaska, you know, things freeze. They bury them 6 feet, and they're down in the permafrost, and they just stay buried, and they did. This guy was frozen. He died of the Spanish flu back in 1918 or 1919, and they buried him up in Alaska, and he's been frozen ever since. And the scientist wanted that Spanish flu virus so he could take it down to his laboratory. So they dug this guy up, got the Spanish flu out of him, took it down, and now they've got it synthesized, or they're reproducing it in the laboratory. Now, this flu killed somewhere between 50 and 100 million people in about 2 years. It killed twice as many people as World War I did. I know I'm just a farm boy, but my common sense tells me that when you've got something that's that deadly, that's something that's that rotten, something that is that filthy and vile and wicked and evil, and it's buried 6 feet in the ground, if you were going to dig it up, it could only be to bury it 18 feet under the ground. As far as I can tell, you can't get that crap buried deep enough. Now, you know, when these scientists, now take a look at a scientist. What is a scientist anyway? Is he a god? Is a scientist somebody that is omniscient and he knows everything and he never makes mistakes and he's godlike and everything that he does works for the good for mankind? Or are there some bad scientists? Over in Russia, those communist scientists, are some of those guys bad? When scientists discover and then synthesize and then produce weapons of mass destructions like HIV virus or Ebola or Spanish flu, do you think that that's good for mankind? And just because we can do it, we should? I think that's why Jesus made this observation in Matthew 24. that the time is coming, he said, when if I don't intervene in this. Verse 22, this is Matthew 24, verse 22. He said, and except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake those days shall be shortened. Bad news is, mankind would destroy himself from off the planet unless the Creator intervenes. He says, that's where we're headed. I think that when we read our papers and listen to Jim Lehrer and we watch President Bush, I think that Armageddon's right ahead of us, not far in the future. Then, when I take a look here at Deuteronomy 28, 53 through 58, talking about a famine scenario with cannibalism extent to such a degree that people will hide and then kill and then eat their own children. Now, this is the only literature that I've ever seen that describes that scenario. And with this GMO experiment well underway, I don't think we're going to turn back. We're not going to outlaw and ban nuclear weapons or nuclear technology. That's not going to happen. And we're not going to ban or terminate Terminator seeds or GMO technology. That's just not going to happen. And there's going to be an outcome that comes from it. And I suspect that the outcome is not going to be good based upon just what I've cited to you so far. And the author here goes on and he points out that the Bible, in the Scripture, the Creator, has some information for us that I think all of us need to hear. And that's why I'm going to report on it. And then you need to make a decision. No, not that you're going to make a decision for Jesus and give your heart to the Lord and go down the sawdust trail. I said, you got to make a decision. You know, do you want to keep eating this stuff? Do you want to avoid it? Do you want to do something about it for yourself? I don't think that we're going to stop Kraft or stop the FDA or the Department of Agriculture or the Bush administration, but I can stop it for myself. The Gordon family can stop the consumption of GMOs, and we did. We made a decision here, and we're following that decision, and there's going to be an outcome from it. And others, people just like you, are going to make that decision. If you don't make any decision, then that is your decision. I'm not going to make a decision, so that's your choice. And then there'll be an outcome. 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, there's going to be an outcome that comes from it. And I'm not here to tell you to give your heart to Jesus and that you need to follow me, and I've got the answers, and if you don't follow me, you're going to hell or something like that. But as a reporter, you know, I come on the air and I say, well, here's some information that maybe you hadn't heard before. You can take that information and you need to, you know, do something with it, whatever you do with it. You know, I hope it works out for you. And I'm a little disappointed in some of the news media over here that ought to at least, you know, give you a running start. You know, just, you know, if Katie Couric came out and said, oh, by the way, there's a thing out here called GMOs, and maybe you ought to buy a book or two on it, and they're not too good for you, or at least it's reported that they're not, and you know, go from there. Well, here's what God had to say about this. In Genesis 1, verses 11 and 12, he said, and God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and the herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. Now, evidently, when God completed this process, you know, he made pears and peaches and oranges, and he made lettuce. And when he made the lettuce, he left the flounder gene out. I don't know, maybe he never thought about putting a flounder gene. Yeah, or excuse me, I guess it's a rat gene into the lettuce or a flounder gene into the tomatoes. Maybe it never crossed his mind. Well, in any event, when he got through, he said that what he had created was good. Maybe it wasn't perfect. Maybe it wasn't better than Monsanto, but, you know, it wasn't bad. He said it was pretty good. Now, unfortunately, the biotech industry has upstaged God's role in creation by attempting to modify every aspect of life through this dark science. The genetic codes of every species' DNA are God's doing. He made it that way. He must have thought that it was okay the way it was. My thinking is that if he got through with the lettuce and he said, oh my God, this stuff isn't too good. I need a mouse gene or a rat gene in here. I think he would have tested it out and done it. Don't you? You know, a guy that's smart enough to make a universe the size of ours and smart enough to make all these various life forms on the planet, you know, when he got through with the lettuce, you know, when he finished up with the peaches and the pears, you know, he said, hey, that's pretty good. I'm sure he ate a couple of them. Test them out. He says, they're not put there by some random act of evolution, as most scientists would like us to believe. In effect, what they're doing is mocking God by declaring that nearly everything that God made is defective, and it can be improved upon. And Monsanto is the company to improve upon God's work. And when you read the pertinent quotes from the biotech industry, they make this technology sound so innocent and so beneficial. And yet the unavoidable conclusion is that every aspect of what they're doing is a violation of God's law. As this book's subtitle states, they're playing God and shoving it down your throat. Now, in the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy, there are clear instructions on how we were to farm our land and grow our food. By establishing the nation of Israel as a priestly nation, they were to follow the divine laws given to them by God and then teach his principles to everybody else in the world. Evidently, God was very upset at the way the other nations were farming and growing their foods. Numerous scriptures rail against their practices as being an abomination to him, and listed below are just two of the many powerful scriptures that I believe clearly point out that genetic engineering is a violation of God's law. First, in Leviticus 19:19, it says, "You shall keep my statutes, and you shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind, and you shall not sow your field with mingled seed, and neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon you." That's Leviticus 19:19. In Deuteronomy 22, verses 9 through 11, he tells us, "You shall not sow your vineyard with diverse seeds, lest the fruit of thy seed which you have sown, and the fruit of your vineyard be defiled. You shall not plow with an ox and an ass together, and you shall not wear a garment of diverse sorts, such as of linen and woolen together." It's in Deuteronomy 22, verses 9 through 11. Now notice that if a field is plowed with an ox and an ass, it's a defilement and a violation of God's law. If a field is planted with various mixed seeds, it too is a defilement and a violation of the law. Therefore, since God is adamant about not mixing, whether it be in plowing, planting, or in the clothes we wear, what do you think his thoughts must be concerning this gene mixing? Now let me assure you that when DNA genes are taken from one organism and then inserted into another, it too is a defilement of the land, and it's a violation of God's law. And furthermore, when we eat foods grown in violation of God's law, they become a defilement in our bodies whether we know it or not. Now who is it other than Satan who would want to defile and to corrupt every aspect of God's earth, and in the process defile and corrupt every person's body? You know, mull it over a little bit. Now, these genes that are taken from one organism and inserted into another is a defilement of the land, and it's a violation of God's law. Some people say to me, they write me emails and they say, "Well, if we can do it, why shouldn't we? If we can make a nuclear weapon, why shouldn't we? If we can bring Spanish flu out of the grave and resurrect it back in the laboratory, why shouldn't we?" Well, we shouldn't, because somebody's going to take that Spanish flu and make a chemical or a germ warfare weapon out of it, and they're going to use it against somebody and kill a lot of people. When that Spanish flu got unleashed upon the world back in 1918, it wasn't just the people in the United States or the Germans or the Russians or somebody else. It killed millions of people all over the world. Now, I don't know that all the people that died from it are necessarily innocent, but, you know, if that flu hadn't got started, you know, 50 million people would have survived that otherwise did not. Now, resurrecting that Spanish flu isn't going to do anybody any good, and it could cause a lot of harm. The reason that they tell you that we did this is so that they give you this song and dance and they say, "Well, we're going to use it for medical science." Okay. Boys and girls, there isn't anything that's ever been discovered. The airplane. You know, the Wright brothers said, "Surely the airplane will be used for peaceful purposes." Nuclear technology. Surely nuclear technology will be used for peaceful purposes. You know, every time somebody discovers something over here, they have high hopes that this is going to be used for the benefit of mankind and peaceful purposes. It never is. It hasn't yet. Name one. Name one. So I haven't seen it. Now, it doesn't make any difference if you invent a spear or a bow and arrow. Somebody's going to use it to kill somebody else with. Then somebody comes along and they come up with a crossbow. Okay, so it just makes killing people with bows and arrows more efficient and effective at longer range. Somebody comes up with gunpowder, and sure enough, it did, in fact, you got to say this, gunpowder made bows and arrows obsolete, but it didn't do anything for mankind. Just gave us a more effective and efficient way to kill more people, easier. At longer range. Now, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, you know, I'm some kind of a moralist, but I'm here to tell you that you haven't seen anything used for peaceful purposes yet. It's always used for war. You can rest assured that GMOs are being used for war. In this statement over here by God himself, now in Deuteronomy 28, 50 through, 53 through 58, when you're reduced to famine, remember these words. You heard it first right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The day will come when you will be faced with a choice of eating your own children because of these GMOs. Now, there is a solution to this, and I would suggest that we, those of us, the individuals out here, I'm not suggesting that the United States government or France or Germany or somebody else is going to take the bull by the horns and solve the problem on a national scale. But individuals can. You know, we as individuals can solve all these problems. You can solve the cancer problem. And cancer's got about 10 or 12, I gave you a list the other day, 10 or 12 cures for cancer. You don't need to march, you know, in some parade to raise money to find a cure to cancer. We've already got 12 or 13 cures. I don't think that a 14th, 15th, or 16th cure is going to do anything more than what's already been done. Hell, you got 13 cures to cancer now, and you're not using them. What makes you think they're going to use number 14, 15, or 16 after you spend another $10, $20, or $50 billion? Now, it stimulates the economy, and it keeps scientists who are studying cancer off the streets and out of the pool halls. Now, if that's your objective, well, you know, then get after it. But I really don't care what those guys do in their after hours or during their working hours. I'm a guy that has to get up and go out and work and produce something intelligent in order to live. I suggest that they do the same thing. Now, anyone who can see this biotech time bomb with spiritual eyes should understand that genetically modified foods are not about improving crops, and they're not providing better alternatives to the world. They're about playing God and polluting his whole creation. And God's law doesn't sanction genetic engineering. It doesn't today, hasn't in the past, and I don't think it's going to in the future. Despite the best efforts of this biotech industry to try and present these altered organisms as something beneficial to the human race. And that's what they always do. They told us how beneficial nuclear technology was going to be. There's never been a time when science hasn't said, oh my God, this is really going to benefit you. These discoveries, just keep giving us money, and we'll keep making discoveries, and they're going to make you really happy. It may very well be genetically modified foods and genetic engineering that finally bring the wrath of God down upon us, like Sodom and Gomorrah. I personally believe that this gene-altering technology is one of the most critical issues the world is now facing, and that a coming food apocalypse isn't far off. And the world is already destroyed once at the time of Noah because of what the ancient book of Jasher seems to clearly indicate was a form of genetic engineering. If scientists insist on playing God, it may not be long before such a divine destruction happens again. So let's take a closer look at what this most interesting book has to say. And we'll do that when we come back. Because I've got to give you a reminder to satisfy the FCC and everybody else around the world here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the book Food Apocalypse, GMOs. That's a Food Apocalypse, spelled A-P-O-C-A-L-Y-P-S-E. It is a Greek word meaning the revelation, I believe. Greek word. You see it in the Apocalypse. You know, the book of Revelation is called the Apocalypse. It's a Greek term. And the author of the book, his name is Greg Ciola, spelled C-I-O-L-A. And you get a copy of this book from BraveNewBookstore.com, BraveNewBookstore.com. And last time I said, why don't you get a case of them, pass them out to your friends, cost you $300. I think he'll give you a discount. It could probably be about $300. And go out here and stir up some hate and discontent against these companies that are unleashing this nightmare, this Frankenstein, Franken-food monster upon all of us. And as we progress along, he's got a chapter or two in here. Here's what you can do to protect yourself from it. And we've been reporting on this now for 10 years. It isn't something that's going to go away. It's getting better, though. Actually, I just saw this the other day. I'm pretty sure it was Kellogg's and General Mills, two big food giants here, are going to stop using GMOs in their breakfast cereal. I thought that was a step in the right direction. It isn't going to solve the problem. It is going to make it go away, but it's going to solve my cornflake problem when I go into Walmart, because maybe I'll buy some Kellogg's cornflakes. Don't quote me on that now. Make sure that you check and find out. But I did read a report not too long ago on it. Now, there's a book called Jasher. It's not a biblical book, but it's mentioned in the Bible twice. Now, while the book of Jasher is not actually in Holy Scripture, it's mentioned in Joshua 10:13 and 2 Samuel 1:18. And the fact that the Bible cites it twice validates that there was such a book by this name in the early history of the nation of Israel. And a preserved copy of this scroll was discovered in the early 1800s. Basically, Jasher is a parallel narrative of all of the familiar stories of the first five books of Moses, with the exception that it goes into much more detail. So with regards to the story of Noah and the flood, Jasher sheds new light on some of the key events that were taking place before God destroyed the world with Noah's flood. And one of these passages is very pertinent in light of our current discussion concerning GMOs. Now it says, "And the sons of men in those days took from the cattle of the earth, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of the air, and taught the mixture of animals of one species with another, in order therewith to provoke the Eternal. And God saw the whole earth, and it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth, all men and all animals." That's in Jasher 4, verse 18. If you'd like a copy, if you'd like to order a copy of the book of Jasher, you can get one from the Crusader Enterprises by calling 800-593-6273, or by going online, www.healthliesexposed. That's all one word. healthliesexposed.com. Again, that's 800-593-6273. That's 1-800-593-6273. That's the book of Jasher. Now, let's pause here for a moment and think about this. And somebody's going to say, well, see, that's evolution. No, it isn't. It's creation. And what these scientists at Monsanto are doing is creation. It's nothing to do with evolution. Evolution, remember, is random chance. These people are not dealing with random chance. They are deliberately creating. They are making. These are superior intelligences working for the Monsanto Corporation with deliberate intent to create these organisms. That's creation, not evolution. God himself said back here in Genesis 11:6 that nothing would be restrained from us. Now, you know, God's been pretty liberal here. He gave us a planet, put us on it, and he's butted out. And what we're doing here is our own doings. And I'm not sure that our own doings over here are going to work out very well for us. And so he's been good enough to give us a couple of guidelines. He says, now, when this thing runs its course, all flesh on the planet is going to be destroyed from off the planet. This genetic engineering, like a Frankenstein monster, is going to go haywire on us. Let me give you an illustration of haywire. Some years back, somebody woke up and said, wouldn't it be kind of keen if we could take salmon, wild salmon, and breed them in pens, and to grow them by feeding them feed right here in pens and harvesting, you know, just like we do cattle. So they hybridized a bunch of these. I don't know how they bred them, but they bred them out and they hybridized them. And they gain weight twice as fast as wild salmon, and they're raised in pens and one thing and another. And they've got a little problem, and that is that they don't produce as many eggs as wild salmon. They only produce about half as many. Now, many species rely upon the sheer numbers that they propagate in order to maintain the size of the species. Salmon happens to be one of those. So millions of salmon are propagated, but only a few of them survive to adulthood. And so when a salmon lays eggs, they lay hundreds of eggs, and hundreds of them hatch, and all the other fish eat all these up, but a few of them survive. A few of them make it. Not many, but a few. And then, of course, they reproduce, and they keep the species going. Well, the salmon that they were keeping in the pens, the hybridized salmon that only produced half as many eggs or less, some of them got loose into the wild population. Now somebody's going to say, well, what's the big deal? Well, here's the big deal. A control mechanism, for instance, for flies and various other insects is that you breed out a bunch of sterile males and turn them loose on the population. And then the sterile males mate with the females, and they don't have any offspring. That's the way you control the population. It's the way you eradicate pests. Salmon aren't pests, at least not in my view, and that's precisely what's happened here. They've got these hybridized salmon. They got out into the natural strain, and within the next 20 years, there aren't going to be any more wild salmon. That's the bottom line. That's the net result. Now, here's science gone run amok. They meant well. They didn't intend to eradicate the wild salmon. That was not their plan. They just wanted to make more money. That's all. They were just trying to make a living in their pens. But you know, the realities of life are that some of those fish were going to get loose. And as those fish get loose, and they multiply, they propagate. And what happens is a few of them are going to survive. And a few of those fish that survive are going to breed with others. And as this wild salmon population continually interbreeds with these domestic salmon that only produce half enough eggs, ultimately, the ultimate end of it is you're going to have a whole population that produces half as many eggs as it normally did before. Somebody's going to say, well, what makes you think that the wild salmon won't make the hybrid salmon produce more eggs? Well, they've been watching them for the last 10 or 15 years and haven't done that yet. So if they haven't done it over the last 10 or 15, what makes you think it's going to happen over the next 10 or 15? But it's going in the other direction. And so we're getting fewer and fewer salmon. The salmon numbers are dropping, and they're going to continue to drop until the wild salmon become extinct. Now keep in mind that God said that the day will come when you will be taking your own children and eating them for want in all things in the siege. All right, so we wanted to play GMO games with the wild salmon, and we're getting a bad result from it. What makes you think that splicing in rat genes into the lettuce is going to give you a better result than the salmon? I don't know. It's a choice, I guess, that we all had to make, and we made it. But the results that are coming from it aren't going to be that good. Here's another example. Back in the old days, you know, before 1900, there were two kinds of coyotes. So out in the western states, when our forefathers got out there, there were killer coyotes. Not many. About 1 in 100 was a killer. That is, the killer coyote would go out and kill lambs, fresh kill, and eat them. Most coyotes are not killers. Now there's a word for this I'm looking for here. They just eat dead carrion, like buzzards. And they don't kill it. They just wait until it dies, and then they go out and clean it up. See, buzzards don't go out killing animals. They just wait until the animal dies, and they go down and eat it. So the ranchers, you know, they'd see a sheep or a lamb killed, and they'd say, well, those dirty coyotes, look what they've done. So they take that coyote, you know, they take that lamb body, and they poison it. Well, the only coyotes that are going to eat that are the coyotes that are not killers. Killer coyotes do not eat carrion. Killer coyotes kill animals and eat them fresh. They do not eat. They're not scavengers. They're not cleaning up the dead animals. So over time, they killed off all of the scavenger coyotes, and now in the West, they've got the entire population, or nearly the entire population, of killer coyotes. And you can't poison them because they don't eat carrion. They only eat live animals. They're only interested in fresh meat. They go out and kill their own. There's another example of an ecological disaster that man has brought upon himself. In the natural order of things, there's going to be a few killer coyotes. That's the way life is. But to go out and deliberately kill every scavenger coyote, which leaves only the killer coyotes left, it makes the matter worse. You're not solving your problem. You're making the problem worse. And so that's where you are today. We've got the same thing here with the salmon. And I predict we'll have the same thing with rat-spliced lettuce. Now, he goes on and says, it's also rather interesting to note that when Jesus and his apostles asked him what it would be like before his return, he said that it would be like the time of Noah. Now, might he have been referring to coming events similar to those cited in the book of Jasher? Is modern genetic research simply a replay of ancient history? The evidence is certainly enough to make you stop and think. Now, notice how God describes the destruction that he was about to bring to the world during Noah's time in the book of Genesis. He said, and the Eternal said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them, in Genesis 6, verse 7. Now, no doubt, there were many reasons why it repented God that he had made man, but one of the most significant ones appears to deal with genetic modification. It's obvious from both Genesis and Jasher that the whole world had become altered because of the genetic technology that was taking place. Now remember, he said, you know, nothing's going to be restrained from these people. These people before the flood were living to be 900 years old. If you think that they were a bunch of savages dragging their knuckles on the back of the ground, consider this. In Genesis 3, there's a story in there about Tubal-Cain being an artificer in brass and iron. Brass and iron. That's called metallurgy. In 1492, when Columbus set sail for America, mankind was still casting cannon and sand. No metallurgy there. In less than 500 years, we're flying to the moon. Boys and girls, those people before the flood lived 500 years. Little doubt but what they had advanced metallurgy. If you see the science and technology that we have today with advanced metallurgy, what makes you think that they didn't have the biological sciences down pat? Just like we have today. God said nothing would be restrained from it. Man is a very smart critter. No taking that away from us. We're pretty damn smart. I'm just not sure that we're smart enough to handle all the neat things that we're able to create and produce. Now, the earth was also corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence, and God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth, in Genesis 6, verses 11 and 12. So after much deliberation and research, it is my belief that genetically modified foods and genetic engineering as a whole may be leading up to the final battle between good and evil. The biotech companies have drawn a line in the sand, and they're determined to fight with all of their resources to implement this technology on a global scale. Despite past protests against them in Europe and a growing juggernaut here in America, genetic engineering plods relentlessly forward, apparently unstoppable. And yet if God's word can be trusted, and I believe it can, then it's just a matter of time before he steps in to put a halt to this outrage. These huge multinational biotech companies may in fact be getting into a battle that's more than they bargained for, maybe more than any of us have bargained for. Now, if you don't think food is a critical issue in the eyes of God, let me remind you that it was the consumption of a forbidden food in the Garden of Eden that led to the fall of man in the first place. Adam and Eve broke God's very first commandment and ate food that was prohibited from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, do you realize that Satan would forego a strategy, or do you think that Satan would forego a strategy that worked so well for him back in the beginning? Could it be now also, or might he now also have the whole world breaking God's food laws and eating the wrong food in the form of GMOs? And remember this, one very important thing, Satan doesn't care whether you know it or not, as long as he can stand before your Creator and accuse us before God, that's all that really matters. You'll see that in Revelation 12, verse 10. He's called the accuser before God. If you're still not convinced that GMO violates God's law, then there's yet another powerful Bible reference that seems to speak directly to the issue of genetically modified foods, and it comes from the book of Matthew in the New Testament. Jesus, you know, Yeshua, relates a parable that to me is very applicable to this subject. Here's what it says. He said, "In another parable put he forth unto them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemies came and sowed tares among the wheat, and then he went his way. But then when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said to him, O sir, did not thou sow good seed in your field? From whence then has it tares? And he said unto them, An enemy has done this. And the servant said to him, Well, wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? And he said, No. Lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. And then in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather you together first the tares, and bind them into bundles, and cast them into the fire and burn them. But gather you the wheat into my barn. Now that parable is in Matthew 13, verses 24 through 30. Now for those of you who don't know what tares are, they're the next best comparison to a genetically engineered version of wheat. Tares are a counterfeit form of wheat. They look exactly like wheat, and when they're growing side by side next to the good wheat, there's no way to tell the difference until they reach harvest time. When tares reach their peak, they turn black on top, and the grain is not edible. Their seeds, in many cases, cannot be replanted, just like Terminator seeds. So doesn't this parable fit our genetic engineering story to a T? So God created the world and he sowed good seed with his DNA blueprint in the earth. But while we were all sleeping, an enemy came and sowed counterfeit crops, GM crops, into our fields. And they may look like the real deal, even when growing side by side with God's food. Doesn't genetically modified corn look exactly like regular corn? But they are not the same. No more than wheat and tares are the same. Genetically modified crops are counterfeit crops sown and grown by God's enemies. Now, Jesus went on to explain the interpretation of the parable. He said, He that sows the good seed is the Son of Man, the field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. But the tares are the children of the wicked one, and the enemy that sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the world, the reapers are the angels. As therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be in the end of the age, the end of the world. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Who has ears to hear, let him hear. Matthew 13, 37 through 43. Now, do you see how pertinent this parable is? I think it proves rather convincingly that biotechnology is satanically inspired, and in my estimation, the multinational biotech companies are playing with fire, and they may very well get burned. And through their DNA modification research, these corporations have now crossed over into the realm of the supernatural. Our world will never be the same again as a result of these alterations that they're making to nature. Regrettably, GM crops have now been released into the environment, and there is no turning back. Now, even if the biotech industry stopped growing genetically modified food tomorrow, it would be impossible to totally purge their long-lasting side effects from the earth. The hard, plain truth is that all of the farms in America and around the world growing biotech crops are already defiled in God's eyes. Planting crops free of GMOs on the same land that once grew them would also defile and corrupt the new crops. To be purified, the land must be made to rest for a considerable period of time. Now, that's a highly unlikely scenario, especially when you consider the financial impact such an action would have. And yet only such a long rest of the land will make the ground once again acceptable to God. And there appears to be no easy way out of this crisis that we have created for ourselves. In light of the seriousness of the situation, might the following quote from Habakkuk have anticipated the coming genetic engineering apocalypse? He said in Habakkuk 3, verses 17 and 18, Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, and though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the eternal, and I will joy in the God of my salvation. Dr. Mei Wan Ho from the Institute of Science and Society, whom I already quoted several times throughout this book, has made a very interesting statement that's very appropriate to our subject matter of religion and genetic engineering. He said, to people whose lives are so inextricably interwoven with their indigenous plant varieties, what else can GM crops be but an abomination? And why should the rest of us not recover to some extent this aesthetic and spiritual connection to our food and food supply? I'm not the only one who has seen the real link between genetic engineering and God's law. And the following information comes from the Alliance for Biointegrity and is being reproduced with their permission. It's an excerpt from a story titled, Why the Genetic Engineering of Our Food Offends Principles of Most Religions. If you'd like to read a full copy of the story, you can obtain one on the internet at www.biointegrity.org. Now, religious individuals have strong grounds to reject the products of genetic engineering based not only on concern for personal safety, but also on concern for the integrity of God's creation and the integrity of humanity's relationship with God. Such rejection has a religious dimension and is a religious right. Now, the FDA's failure to require labeling of genetically altered foods is effectively restricting Americans from exercising this right, and it subjects every individual to foods they have sound religious reasons to avoid. And I'm one of them. And there are millions like me. We have sound religious reasons to avoid GMO food. Well, okay, we're about out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll take it up right there tomorrow night, same time, same station. Keep in mind that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.